theology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence with Prince, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this February West Coast, now February the 9th, on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. We'd like to also welcome those listening to this broadcast on Wind Talkers Radio Network and on BlogTalkRadio.com. I had 2 hours with my good friend Drew Malone Rains III on his Marines Disquisition radio show on those two networks I just named. And we got to cover a lot of topics. Shortly after the show, a friend of mine emailed me a very interesting description on some of what's going on with the banks, especially in California, after this drastic collapse of IndyMac. Maybe some of you remember when that occurred. And we had to save these companies from their demise. Well, I want to play a clip. This is actually a video, but the audio is really good on it, and you can understand what's going on. And this is called the IndyMac Slap in Our Face. And it appears at www.thinkbigworksmall.com. And I think these two gentlemen's names are Brian and Hank. Anyway, have a listen.
Good morning, and this is your TBWS Daily for February 8, 2010. You know, does the government really want to clean up this mess? Consider this. Like many other banks, IndyMac closed its doors and was seized by the FDIC in July 2008. The assets of IndyMac Bank were sold to One West Bank by the FDIC in March 2009.
Well, guess who owns One West Bank? That would be Goldman Sachs VP Steven Mnuchin and big-time Sachs investors and billionaires George Soros and John Paulson. John Paulson, of no blood relation to ex-Goldman Sachs CEO Hank Paulson, he would be the ex-Secretary of the Treasury. All current residential mortgages were purchased at 70% of the par value. All HELOCs were purchased at 58% of the value. But just to make sure the One West guys were feeling all cozy and warm, the FDIC decided to step up and cover between 80 and 95% of the losses they might incur from any of those naughty IndyMac mortgage homeowners. So you're probably asking yourself why we think that you should know this.
Well, in the event of a short sale or foreclosure, the loss is calculated using the original loan balance and not the amount One West Bank paid for the loan. I feel the plot thickening here a little bit, don't you? Here's an actual example from a client of one of our TBWS viewers. Now make sure to listen closely, because this is going to get your blood boiling.
Take an actual loan amount of $478,000 plus 6 months of missed payments for a grand total of $485,200. One West Bank paid $334,600 for that loan. Okay, now the underwater homeowner has an all-cash offer that nets $241,000 to One West Bank. Stick with us now.
Well, according to the FDIC formula, you take the original loan amount minus the amount of the offer, and that leaves you with $244,200.
Next, according to the sweetheart deal, the FDIC writes a check to One West Bank for 80% of the net loss. So in this case, One West Bank gets a check from the taxpayer, courtesy of the FDIC, for $195,360.
Okay, so now add the $195,360 from the government to the $241,000 cash offer, and One West Bank just made $436,360 on a loan that they bought for only $334,600. And all they had to do is sell it for whatever they wanted to. Guys, they can't lose money on this deal. Think about it.
So One West Bank just profited from the short sale to the tune of $101,760. All thanks to the insane arrangement that they have with the FDIC. Hey, whoever said it's good to have friends in high places wasn't kidding around.
So the next time you ask yourself, why is it so hard to get a loan modification? The answer is because there's too much money to be made with short sales and foreclosures. Now, are you ready for an encore?
Now remember, even though One West Bank profited by over $100,000, the house was still sold for less than the full loan amount. In this actual scenario, the borrower was forced to sign a promissory note for $75,000 with One West Bank. So who really pays in the end? Well, we'll just let you decide.
Oh, and by the way, the FDIC just announced that it needs to start borrowing money from the Treasury. The Treasury being the place where all those Goldman Sachs guys called home before they called One West Bank home.
If you're as mad about this as me and Frank are, share this video with everyone you know. Help us reveal where the real problems lie in the industries that we all care so deeply about.
Well, that's pretty much freaking crazy, wouldn't you say, Brian?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of really shows you all the things that are wrong with the industry, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But you know, we saw some things that were right with the industry Friday night, didn't we?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you tell them what it was?
Well, we went to the award ceremony for Guarantee Mortgage in San Francisco. It was actually at the San Francisco Zoo. And I'll tell you what, you know how healthy a company is if they're really acknowledging the people that are helping them be successful. The only standing ovation and the biggest round of applause came for the processing staff.
Wow.
And I thought that spoke volumes of that company. I was absolutely astonished, amazed, and humbled.
That's right. We were both humbled and honored to be there. It was great. And thanks for having us, guys. And don't forget, if you're meeting us for the first time, you can subscribe down below for free.
Follow us on Twitter, and especially with today's daily, get this in front of somebody that you know. Get this in front of everybody that you know. Show them how insane it's gotten in our industry, please.
And pay attention to the success links on the right over here. You guys have a good one. We'll see you tomorrow. Think big, work small. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, now, Let's consider something. This hasn't even gotten to the derivatives hedge fund market yet. This is just on the open real estate market, the kind of backdoor deals that go down. Of course, people that had invested in the long-term rise of real estate prices, and this appears to have occurred in California, or really doesn't matter. It was under the original portfolio of IndyMac, who was in California at that time. Subsequently, after that, Countrywide had a big problem, and then Bear Stearns, and it pretty much the fecal matter hit the fan pretty much all over the country and overseas, and the game is still going on, folks. Soon to approach $5 quadrillion. You've got a Federal Reserve upside down that amount. This is a sick economy. And what a good segue to bring our guest tonight. He is a naturopath that has his own radio show on Republic Broadcasting Network, The Story Behind the Story. And he's a frequent guest on Evident Footprints. He and I have done some parallel research in a number of areas, informing you of what's really going on in this country, what's really going on in small-town America. And he's our good friend, my good friend, Dr. A. Truott. Dr. Ott, welcome to Evident Footprints.
Tip of the iceberg, and what the powers that be, you know, really don't want people to discuss is where the loan paper comes from in the first place. Again, it's really nothing more than a bank entry. What does a bank actually do these days with this fractional system that we have to even justify the creation of a loan? I mean, it's just a credit entry on a computer screen and a authorization given them to do that by the Fed's Federal Reserve structures. But in reality, do they actually transfer any value of depositor stocks into that building of the house like it was in the 1920s and 1930s, before the Federal Reserve really took control. Mm-hmm. You know, these small little savings and loans, and as portrayed by George Bailey, the Bailey Savings and Loan in the movie It's a Wonderful Life, you know. No, it's not that at all. It's really developed into the point where they're creating these things out of thin air, Don. That's why this is such a massive inflationary bust cycle is going on here.
Yes, no doubt about it. And it's catching up to them. They can only play these games. You know, this is a shell game, isn't it? Like what you would see on a street corner in a big city, maybe even a small town. On a sidewalk.
It's like a shell game, but it's really more of a hyperinflated balloon. You know, the balloon is going to only take so much hot air before it bursts and it causes an explosion. And I've been saying this for many years. I don't know if I talked to you much about my background before I went into the field of naturopathy and minerals and that, but actually, I graduated with a bachelor of degree in accounting, and I went into financial planning. I actually won a scholarship to be trained in the derivatives market and that in Wall Street, and I was back there for a period of about 3 months with intensive training. I met the power brokers back there. I remember we were put up in a penthouse suite at the Marquis Marriott on Broadway. We had the tail end of the session. We actually had a visit for 20 minutes by Fed Chairman Paul Volcker, and I'll never forget what he told me, Don. I'll never forget this. He walks in. I know he's just smells of money. He has his $1,000 suit and Gucci shoes, and he comes walking in, and he pulls out of his pocket one of those Cuban cigars. You know, they have that funny green look to them. You know, he pops takes the bit out of it, and then he reaches in to light it. And you know what he uses to light the cigar?
What's that?
He has a wad of cash in a roll. And I'm sitting there right to the front of the class. There's about 25. Individuals in the classroom as he comes in, and I never seen money with that large of denominations. It was just it looked almost like funny money because it was such a different color of green. You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
There was at least 5 zeros on the bill. And he pulls it out of his wad, and he crinkles it up and then lights that and burns that to light a cigar. And the point that he was showing was, this is for the consumption of the goy. It's not for us. It's not for the people who understand it. You need to invest in gold and silver, precious metals, and put them into the Swiss bank accounts as we do, because that's the only real wealth, he said.
Mm-hmm.
And keep in mind that for the whole entire 3 month period there, I was learning how to do the portfolio management, the risk assessment, all of that in a computer program. And it was always diversity with a base of good blue chip stock. The solidest blue chip was General Motors, which is a laugh right now. But Donald was amazing. I asked him, I said, wasn't that putting all your eggs in one basket? What about diversity? And he just soaked up the moment, and he said, let me tell you, until you have these, and he held in his pocket, he had a fistful of what looked like Krugerrands, you know, gold coins.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, until you have these in a Swiss account, you have no eggs. So he was basically letting us know that these dollar bills were just figments of nothing, and no matter how big the digits were, the zeros at the end of the bill, they were ultimately just paper and could, you know, make a good cigarette light. All right? And that really stayed with me because he said it's just a manipulation of the structure of the system which we control. We meaning, you know, the Jewish elite.
Mm-hmm.
And it was stunning to me because I thought, well, shouldn't everybody in America know what's going on in this insidious plan to really bankrupt this country? And you see, the Hegelian dialectic is simple. There's the evil specter of communism out there that so kills all these millions of people and puts people under a yoke of a tyranny. And then we have the evil of capitalism on the communist side. So these two are continually fighting against each other. And in the meantime, what's being built is a dictatorial socialist state where it's worse than neither one of them. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what's going on here. And it's been in the works since at least 1913.
And, you know, it's a very descriptive opening or show that you described where he's got all the props there, you know, the lighting of the cigar with the bills and to allude to, you know, the gold pieces, whether they're Krugerrands or whatever, but the whole concept of an offshore secret bank account in Switzerland, you know.
Right.
That's the mentality. Before we get into anything, and I certainly don't want to misdirect you or take you off topic. We can certainly come back to this topic. I didn't even plan on anything specific. I'm sort of responding to all the communications I've gotten from people. I find this story is kind of interesting. Police chiefs resigning. Does anyone find this weird? This report was dated on February 7th. 2010. What are your thoughts about this? Now, this is posted at 4winds10.com. Number one, Gaithersburg, Maryland. Gaithersburg Police Chief John King resigned with little explanation last week, leaving his colleagues and community members wondering what happened. Two, Gutenberg, Iowa Police Chief resigns after 7 months on the job. No reason. Three, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Richard Pickles retires after serving a month as Harrisburg police chief. Four, Culpeper, Virginia, when Scott Barlow announced 2 weeks ago he would step down from his job as chief of police with the town of Culpeper, it caught a lot of people off guard, including us. Five, Carbondale, Illinois. I mean, this is all over the country, true. There are 70 police chiefs. I don't know how recent this was, but it seems like it's within the last couple of days or so.
Hmm.
70 police chiefs. And then they say some major cities had police chief turnover in 2009. Early InfraGuard info? Question mark.
Huh.
I think you know about that. Maybe that's a hint we should talk about. InfraGuard. Seattle, Los Angeles, Miami, San Francisco, and Dallas. And there's another post about CEOs and CFOs resigning. Of course, I've been reporting that for a couple of years, but it seems to really be picking up right now. We're talking about jumping ship, going overseas, depositing or transferring funds into accounts, and the word has it when they go there to pick up the money, they're going to get stopped. I don't know. What's your take on all
that? Well, that's interesting. I have not heard that. Of course, I've been focusing with my shows on this the psychotronic weaponry that's being perfected, like it's really going out crazy, Don, with that. And people that are being stalked and harassed by this satellite surveillance terrorism from the NSA, okay, are many of them are tied to the banking and or mortgage industries for some reason. There's just some major transfer of technology to private investigators in the banking industry for some reason. And I kind of wonder if it's not related to that story there with the CEO's bailing and the police chief's bailing out too. 70, you say, huh?
And I'm sure they just ended it because they had to end that page somewhere, you know.
Wow.
It's quite a compelling list. Places you wouldn't even think of, some small towns and some very large towns as well. Should raise concern.
Well, I don't know how much you've listened to my shows recently, but I'm trying to get Russ Dizdar, Pastor Russ, to come and go over his book, The Black Awakening, in depth. I've got the book. I've read it. I'm going into the MP3 trainings that he has. I tell you what, this has got me deeply concerned. Don, I think that, you know, the scenario he puts out in the book is that there are a lot of police departments, you know, that are heavily infiltrated with the satanic ritual abuse minions called the Chosen Ones. And I wonder if it could be that some of these police chiefs are realizing the depths of this now. And, the order, when it's given to these Manchurian soldiers, okay, will wreak a complete a bloody harvest and devastation in this country. It begins with infiltration in the police forces, and the anarchy. There won't be enough law enforcement to take care of the massive anarchy, and so the next step is to bring in, of course, United Nations troops, peacekeepers, but a really martial law Gestapo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you've got a point there, and yes, I have been listening to your show. You said, I don't know how much. I said, probably too much. Just kidding.
Golly.
No, you had a really interesting show today, in fact, and you're familiar with this topic, so...
Well, you know, it's funny that my guest today has got booked on George Norrie, Coast to Coast. He's on there tonight discussing the same topic we discussed earlier. So he's getting some credibility going out there with it. I mean, the book is well written, and I think it's highly credible, his story. There is no doubt that this technology that the NSA utilized and perfected like 20 years ago is now basically obsolete and has basically been sold to banks and other institutions, for basically eavesdropping on their bad mortgages and other things. I mean, this is the depths of depravity now. Going on, but the documentation is pretty solid.
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, this is. It sounds like you're referring to the Promis software from Inslaw, and what was designed to be used for the bankruptcy courts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, is that what you're referring to?
Well, there's that for sure, because the computer programs that would run are a part and parcel of this. That's what led to the second and third generation versions that have now been put online. Well, decades ago, actually, at the NSA headquarters there in Fort Meade, and the technology of eavesdropping via satellite networking. This is what this Dr. John Hall has outlined in his book that we reviewed today. It's amazing the technology that they can use through a satellite X-ray structure. You don't need to worry. They can actually eavesdrop on you and see you inside your house. I mean, even in a cave, they can go in and to the X-ray thermography can see you, watch you, hear you. And which just beggars the question. This is, again, a worldwide capability. We're expected to believe they can never find and know exactly pinpointing where Osama bin Laden is. Well, what Dr. Hall shows and proves is that this technology can see many, many hundreds of feet, if not miles, into the Earth itself to scan, and that's, again, how HAARP figures into that, because it's, again, the rays of the HAARP beams are what's utilized as a basic X-ray scan of the Earth's crust going in, and Exxon uses it for mapping the oil reserves, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But it can surely be, the modification is used to search for individuals. They know, if they were targeting one, I guarantee you they can know where they're at. So it just, again, shows us that this whole war on terror is a false flag. It's absolutely a cover for these illegal wars.
Yeah. Now, true, if what you're saying is true, and I agree with you, I mean, this technology's been around for quite some time, and they can locate somebody in a cave. Can they sort of readjust the read that they get on this device and maybe search for a certain certificate of live birth?
You think they would be able to, huh?
Yeah, I think it would be interesting. Of course they know. They know where it isn't anyway, right?
Well, yeah, it's hard to get a certificate of live birth if your papa is a test tube.
Yeah. Well, maybe you could get the price tag anyway, you know.
There you go. Yeah, get the lab of origin, the manufacturer statement of origin, the MSO would be what we need for the long legged Mac Daddy.
Well, now you've been doing a number of shows based upon this remote neural monitoring, and there's a lawsuit against the NSA about that. Do you have much information on that, or beyond what we've talked about in the past?
Well, yeah, you got to understand that the next generation here of monitoring will utilize nanotechnology in the form of, believe it or not, nanobots, nanoscale robots, for heaven's sakes, that are literally 200 times smaller than the width of a human hair. I mean, I've got the documents, Don, that prove this, and I'm just that plus a nano chip circuitry. Now we've heard about these embedded Vera chips, right?
Mm-hmm.
No. So that's old. That's old technology. What's really, really amazing is the nano chip technology. Literally on the head of a pin, you're having 3,000 or 4,000 of these nano chips. I mean, that's how tiny they are, Don. And if you go under the microscope and look at them, they're very detailed. They're generated by this new carbon structure that they can generate on the nano micro sub micro scale. And these things are incredibly powerful for transmission purposes. Now, we've had confirmation from a group of physicians in Austria that the Novartis and Sanofi Pasteur vaccines contain these nanobots. The nano chips.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this ought to just, make your hair stand on end with with what is coming out of this group in Germany. And let me just share with the listeners a verbatim report. This was going back last fall. Dr. Gert Hammer, he's got a group there in Austria called German New Medicine Group, GNM. And indeed, he said that these injection needles with Novartis, they have the nanochips in the very tip. You can't even see them at all with the naked eye. We need a microscope, but you even only as low as 12 times magnification, you can begin to see these nanochips, okay? And he said, indeed, they work like the motherboard in a computer. They're small enough to actually cross the blood-brain barrier. They're carried by the blood cells themselves, and they're designed to migrate to the neuron, the electrical firing capability of the brain. So they actually lodge in the brain and then begin to communicate with a mother computer in an incredible way to monitor what's going on in the body and the brain. And once this is done, the central computer then can be used to communicate with the individual's brain. This is beyond science fiction to me. It's as factual as you can get. Let me share with you exactly what Dr. Hamer said. He says, quote, once the slaves of the world have, they're calling it the death chips, and that's apropos. He says, once the slaves have the death chips implanted, they are not allowed, of course, to know about it. And then they will be just like trained poodles, and nobody will dare to speak up. It will be like among the Masonic brethren. Everybody knows that the moment he utters a word of dissent, he will be served poison in the coffee by the always Jewish Grand Master and won't survive another day. The whole world is going to be a concentration camp full of slaves, except for the members of one religious group. To have the death chip implanted in the potential personal death sentence at any given time. To have the death chip implanted is the potential personal death sentence at any given time. And he goes on to ask the question, how naive do you have to be to demand of the Mossad and the CIA / NSA to disclose what their real intentions are, to, quote, table the facts? Well, the mouse never believes the cat will ever come. In a company with several hundreds of staff members, which produces, or better yet, fills the injection needles for the chip vaccination, it will only need one or two reliable people to insert the chip at the end. And all the other workers can confirm that they knew nothing about it. This is called quality control and final check, and appears to be completely normal. Strange is, too, he says, that every single chip vaccination needle has its own individual code number, which is added to the individual's ID number, whether it's a passport number or whether it's a Social Security number, like here in America, it's added and put in the computer to that ID number. And he asks, why else would the silly summer flu shot needle have its own individual number, and why should the passport or license, a driver's license or Social Security number, accompany the supposed flu vaccination? And why do the Americans not want to let anybody into their country who does not have a chip? So anyway, it goes on. It's pretty chilling when you understand the technology. And to verify this, I downloaded a government publication. This was presented to President Obama and Congress by a company called Congressional Research Services, a report issued February 7th of 2009, so just over a year ago, written by a guy named John Sargent, Jr., specialist in science and technology policy. Well, it goes on and explains where this nanotechnology field is heading, and outlines and shows how many billions of dollars the federal government has spent for the technology and the R&D just in the last decade. And Don, it's stunning. Why in the world would our government be wanting to get this technology so perfected if it wasn't for these, you know, nano bots and the nano chips?
If the chips are that small, I don't understand why they have to build such a large facility. You know.
Well, that's the very reason why they do.
Mm-hmm.
To not only produce the chips themselves, which are again done by Raytheon and Hitachi and other private contractors, but you see, what they're missing with all this, according to this report, is the next generation of artificial intelligence supercomputer to track and communicate with all of these chipped individuals. That's what's going to be built here in Utah, in what's so-called data center by the NSA. Mm-hmm. Now, keep in mind, ladies and gentlemen, this is from mainstream news reports. This is not some crackpot website or anything we're talking about. We're talking about government's own figures. The Army Corps of Engineers has set up a website to take contractors' bids, which will close on February 18th. The bids will be for the construction of this data center in a place called Camp Williams in just south of Salt Lake City. Now, Camp Williams is this massive, sprawling training center for National Guard troops, not only in Utah, but other states as well. And, Don, the facility that's going to be cordoned off, fenced off, under high security perimeters for the NSA will consist of a whopping 200 acres of land. Now, compare that to the Fort Meade facility now, which is on about 10 acres. Currently, the Fort Meade, the supercomputer there that's online with Tel Aviv's supercomputer in Israel, consumes approximately 3 megawatts of electricity daily. That puts a heavy strain on the power grid there on the East Coast and the Atlantic seaboard, especially when it's hit by a big snowstorm like it just barely was. Now, the website taking the bids and the report that was just issued by the Associated Press and appeared in the Washington Post Tuesday last, explains that this facility will have a control center of 1 million square feet. The mission control center, which will be basically this huge bank of supercomputer monitors and access points, will be 100,000 square feet. And this entire facility is designed to consume 36 megawatts of energy. Now, this is so massive, it's hard to even wrap your mind around. We're talking about 36 megawatts. That's the equivalent of what 33,000 four-bedroom single-family dwellings would consume daily. 33,000 is going into one massive data collection center. And the Associated Press story, Don, went on to explain that any inquiries as to what was going into this, the technology, what it was actually being used for, it was basically said it's super secret. It wouldn't be, of course, allowed to be explained. Well, I'm sorry, Don, but I don't think there's that many domestic terrorists in America that we have to build that type of facility, consuming that much power and electricity on the government's, tax rolls, without full disclosure being given. I mean, that's unconscionable. I mean, if you don't give explanations, well, then any type of shadowy thought process, becomes the norm. Mm-hmm. And when you combine how much money has been spent in R&D, the technologies and the Department of Defense and the intelligence community, this is just what the General Accounting Office is showing. It's not accounting for the billions and billions more of black op funds that are being tied now to these massive big pharmaceuticals and companies like Raytheon. And don't forget our sweet little DynCorp, which is involved in this. So it ought to be a concern to every single American and listening to this show, Canadian as well, and worldwide, because this is a really an affront to all humanity. This facility will be tracking every one of the 6 billion people or has a capacity to track and control them. Now, like Dr. Hamer said, there in Germany, it's absolutely possible if, with this technology, these nanobots, to create a brain hemorrhage, a stroke, and or other cancer situation very easily. And you know what really ticks me off, Don?
What's that?
It explains that, and the technology shows that they've used certain individuals targeted as guinea pigs on this technology. This is again in the research by Dr. John Hall, that they've taken and targeted by just a sampling of DNA certain people that they deem to be a threat or an activist, and they've been hitting them with these beams for years and years, and causing cancers and very rare killer leukemia structure. Does this sound kind of familiar to somebody you know?
You would be thinking of Don Harkins, would you?
Exactly. And I, as I interviewed Dr. Hall today on my show, and have read and cross-referenced his book, I'm becoming, it's not necessary that Don even had a Verichip put in, though he knew he did.
Mm-hmm.
But once it's there, and there's no doubt that he was hammered with this. I have no doubt about it now.
Mm-hmm. Via satellite.
Yeah.
Via satellite. The facility didn't exist. Now, pardon me, a couple of things come to mind. Number one, you're saying these nanobots or these nanoparticles, whatever you want to call them, are so small that you can fit 3,000 to 4,000 of them on the head of a pin. The big question is, how many do they intend on injecting? And I've heard stories that these things can actually begin, they're semi-biological in nature, that they grow filaments, which give them the ability to propagate and interconnect as if they're forming a circuit. Now,
my initial thoughts on this when I heard about this from Dr. Hamer was, oh my goodness, you mean to tell me that billions of vaccine needles have these nanobots or nano chips in them? That's going to cost a fortune. But in digging into it, once the computer template is done, it's actually no sweat at all to make. I mean, it's very, very inexpensive, not even a penny. As what these cost, because they're basically brought out of thin air from the carbon structures.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's really like a pattern that zip zip zip. They're making thousands of them. I mean, it's that easy. And then so you just have to have the circuitry of these be able to be tied into the primary computer and then tracked by via satellite networking into the mainframe computer. All of this then can be orchestrated. The entire global population can be manipulated and orchestrated to a final conclusion. Whatever they want, whatever the wizard behind the curtain wants to have it happen. Now this is, again, ladies and gentlemen, this is not ramblings. This is not science fiction. It's fact. The documents are there. You can actually go and you can do a Google search. The report that was given to the Congress and the government is called Nanotechnology, a Policy Primer, a Policy Primer for the Government, CRS Report for Congress, Congressional Research Service. Again, that was dated February 7, 2009. The author's John F. Sargent. And you can also just type in a Google search nanobots, nanochips, or nanotechnology, and read to your heart's content. There's not one Fortune 500 company that has not invested millions into this technology in the last decade. Don, I just had no idea myself what was going on with this as far as surveillance, as far as being able to take mind control to a whole new level of science.
Well, I suspected this, you know, for quite some time, and many other people I know have also. I'm not saying that we saw the whole picture. None of us had all the puzzle pieces. What I find interesting is this is so I don't know, obscene in a sense. It's almost like can it, give me 3,000 or 4,000 extra sprinkles for my hot fudge sundae, would you please? And if this thing is going to communicate with a computer, and it takes some time to get up to your brain, imagine that you could find a corner after your shot and do a yoga headstand. Think of the havoc you could play on the computer.
Well, I don't know about that. These little bugs. There's also a little video of I think Raytheon put this out about their spy bots that they call them. And they're under contract. They're building these right now for the military. And this is absolutely, if it's laughable. Certain squadron leaders will carry these around in their pocket. They're like little tiny steelies. But when activated, they come open and they buzz around like a little tsetse fly, okay? And they're tied into the control room, whether it's, you know, like an armored vehicle or whatever. But they, let's say the patrol is pinned by an enemy attack. They activate these nano bots. They fly into the air, go behind the lines, and they're so sophisticated. They not only have video sent back, but they can hear and record everything the enemy is saying. You know, it's that technology that is being built and deployed now. I'm just stunned at where this is heading. The breakthroughs in technology are just Pandora's box, literally being opened here. But again, there's the old saying we've always said and repeated that, you know, power does corrupt individuals if they have low integrity, but absolute power, you know, just corrupts absolutely. And we're talking about some very power mad people here, this elitist group that just wants to design their, you know, the Shangri-La. The primer will explain to you, this government report, where the future is in the next 20, 25 years. Once these computer networks are tied in and the power grid is established to power them up, Don, there's not going to be, you know, manufacturing like we currently know it. There's not going to be need for raw materials. Again, these nanobots come from the very essence of the God particle. That's where the creation begins. All right, into the quarks and the basic elements of all life forms itself. These computers now can actually build, let's say, a table. Let's say you want a nice oak wood or whatever wood table. Instead of going down and cutting the trees and making the lumber and putting the table together, believe it or not, this computer can actually generate and build this table in a manufacturing center without chopping a tree down or anything like that. It replicates it that way. And that's mind-boggling, isn't it?
Yeah. Now, can they do that with a certificate of live birth, too?
Well, it's a... You know, maybe they will.
True, we've got a caller on the line here. Would you like to take a call?
Oh, surely.
We've got Gary in Arkansas. Gary, welcome to Evident Footprints. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good this evening, gentlemen. Nice hearing both of you on the air, especially you, Truon. I follow your program quite often. I have a question what you people think about the idea that Morgellons disease is tied in with this nanobot stuff and being a silicon-based, I call it an artificial intelligence of some sort, that networks through the body. It sounds to me like what you're talking about is very, very similar to Morgellons disease, which I think has been dispensed by chemtrails, so maybe we've already got the bots in us.
Or anyone that's jumped down. Yeah, go ahead, True.
Absolutely. That's part of this report on these carbon monkey balls is what they're calling them. This is the big issue with this is, you know, as you create something out of nothing and play God and play creator, there's a side effect. These carbon structures are not anything the earth has ever used before, and it's still unsure how these, you know, how Mother Nature will dispense of them. So when you have these monkey balls, as they're called, getting out, drifting out of the zone, and either by design or by accident, it doesn't matter, there's experimentation going on. Most definitely they react with bacteria and or viruses, and in some instances, believe it or not, I believe that's how this H1N1 novel flu came about. It's a creation, once they have the template of the 1918 killer virus, it's quite easy to replicate it again and then dispense it out. Morgellons disease, you analyze that from blood of infected people, you'll see that these creatures are semi-machine, semi-biological, okay? They're a crossbreed, and the only thing that makes sense for their appearance is indeed a nanotechnology experiment gone awry.
Yeah, from what I've been able to discern or find out, these fibers are growing as a result of a sort of a web that's being spun, but it's interfacing or interacting with polymers that are also in the initial chemtrails.
Right.
And being fed off of desiccated blood, which activates as the polymers, which are just a fine powder, are actually absorbing humidity and or moisture to the extent where it acts as a feeding system, a long-term feeding system, in fact, because the polymers will hold many, many times their size and weight in water or general humidity.
Mm-hmm.
This is science fiction from the Frankenstein movies, you know?
Oh, it is, absolutely. And what's going to be the long-term future of this? And, yeah, this is some of the questions that this intelligence primer is posing to Congress. You know, Congress, and you know, needs to take this seriously and figure out where they want to go with it. Do we want to continue to play God with this area? My gut feeling is that's the Fortune 500 companies will do it to make money no matter what.
Yeah. Well, Gary, are you getting your question answered here?
Yeah, I pretty much caught on to that. When I first started studying and looking into the Morgellons disease, about that time, this carbon nanotube technology was spoken about, and being with silicon-based, well, transistors and printed circuits and stuff like that are made out of silicon-based stuff, so it all started tying together. So maybe our Congress has already been infected with these little buggers.
Well,
maybe if they don't vote right on an issue, they'll just push a button and the computer will kill them.
Well, that's probably not too far-fetched. There's strong evidence that, of course, when you convene, there's immediate mind programming going on. The only question becomes just who in the hell is pushing the buttons? Who's making this happen in reality? Is it a combination of people or just one group on the top? Those are valid concerns. You know, clear back in the 70s when the MK Ultra Senate investigations were ongoing, there was, I got a copy of a transcript. I'm not sure which senator it was. It might have been Goldwater back then. He was incensed and said to the NSA individuals, How do we know you're not using these psychotronic weapons on Congress? And the answer was curt and kind of mocking. He says, you don't.
Hmm.
See, so...
Yeah.
That movie, again, I refer back to that, Enemy of the State, with Will Smith and Gene Hackman. Keep in mind that technology that portrayed there through the NSA is old technology. That literally in that movie was what was being done in the 70s. It's so much more advanced now.
Well, great response. Gary, we're going to have to let you go, but I want to thank you for calling in.
I appreciate you, gentlemen. Have a good evening now.
All right, you too.
Sleep tight if you can.
We're about out of time. It's a fast hour, isn't it?
Oh, my goodness. It did go fast.
Went very fast.
Let me just, the book that I'm talking about, written by Dr. John Hall, he's on Coast to Coast tonight with George Norrie. But the book is called A New Breed, Satellite Terrorism in America. Very, very, I like the title. It's pretty apropos. And Don, anybody wants to contact me, you can go to my website. It's meminerals.com and send me a text message, and I'll try my best to get back to you. But do your own research. Don't take my word for it, Don's word, or anybody's word for it. Just Google up a search of nanotechnology, nanobots, nanochips. You'll be absolutely amazed with the pictures and the documentation that's readily available now on the website. So, Don, thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming on the show, and you're going to be on again next Monday, so I look forward to that. In the meantime, you take care, and I'll be listening to your show, Republic Broadcasting, Monday through Friday, mm-hmm. and the times are there at Republic, if you go there, folks.
As Mork from Ork would say in closing, nano nano. Good night.
All right, good night, Troop. Folks, you've been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com, and our special guest, Dr. A. True Ott. Special thanks go out to Wind Talkers Radio Network and blogtalkradio.com for broadcasting this show. Also, would like to thank our caller, Gary, for his insightful questions and comments. And we want to thank BBSRadio.com, Don and Doug Newsom, for making the show possible. Seth Hendrick on the sound, and Don Newsom on the sound also. Most of all, we want to thank you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join us again tomorrow evening when my special guest will be Dr. Mike Castle. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.